Prince Hyacinth and the Dear Little Princess. Once upon a time, there lived a king who was deeply in love with a princess, but she could not marry anyone because she was under an enchantment. So the king set out to seek a fairy and asked what he could do to win the princess's love. The fairy said to him, "You know that the princess has a great cat which she is very fond of. Whoever is clever enough to tread on that cat's tail is the man she is destined to marry." The king said to himself that this would not be very difficult, and he left the fairy, determined to grind the cat's tail to powder rather than not tread on it at all. You may imagine that it was not long before he went to see the princess, and Puss, as usual, marched in before him, arching his back. The king took a long step and quite thought he had the tail under his foot, but the cat turned round so sharply that he only trod on air. And so it went on for 8 days, till the king began to think that this fatal tail must be full of quicksilver. It was never still for a moment. At last, however, he was lucky enough to come upon Puss fast asleep and with his tail conveniently spread out. So the king, without losing a moment, set his foot upon it heavily. With one terrific yell, the cat sprang up and instantly changed into a tall man, who, fixing his angry eyes upon the king, said, "You shall marry the princess because you have been able to break the enchantment, but I will have my revenge. You shall have a son who will never be happy until he finds out that his nose is too long. And if you ever tell anyone what I have just said to you, you shall vanish away instantly, and no one shall ever see you or hear of you again." Though the king was horribly afraid of the enchanter, he could not help laughing at this threat. "If my son has such a long nose as that," he said to himself, "he must always see it, or feel it, at least, if he is not blind or without hands." But as the enchanter had vanished, he did not waste any more time in thinking, but went to seek the princess, who very soon consented to marry him. But after all, they had not been married very long when the king died, and the queen had nothing left to care for but her little son, who was called Hyacinth. The little prince had large blue eyes, the prettiest eyes in the world, and a sweet little mouth, but, alas, his nose was so enormous that it covered half his face. The queen was inconsolable when she saw this great nose, but her ladies assured her that it was not really as large as it looked, that it was a Roman nose, and you had only to open any history to see that every hero has a large nose. The queen, who was devoted to her baby, was pleased with what they told her, and when she looked at Hyacinth again, his nose certainly did not seem to her quite so large. The prince was brought up with great care, and as soon as he could speak, they told him all sorts of dreadful stories about people who had short noses. No one was allowed to come near him whose nose did not more or less resemble his own, and the courtiers, to get into favor with the queen, took to pulling their babies' noses several times every day to make them grow long. But, do what they would, they were nothing by comparison with the prince's. When he grew sensible, he learned history, and whenever any great prince or beautiful princess was spoken of, his teachers took great care to tell him that they had long noses. His room was hung with pictures, all of people with very large noses, and the prince grew up convinced that a long nose was a great beauty, that he would not on any account have had his own a single inch shorter. When his 20th birthday was passed, the queen thought it was time that he should be married, so she commanded that the portraits of several princesses should be brought for him to see, and among the others was a picture of the dear little princess. Now, she was the daughter of a great king, and would someday possess several kingdoms herself. But Prince Hyacinth had not a thought to spare for anything of that sort. He was so much struck with her beauty. The princess, whom he thought quite charming, had, however, a little saucy nose, which, in her face, was the prettiest thing possible. But it was a cause of great embarrassment to the courtiers, who had got into such a habit of laughing at little noses that they sometimes found themselves laughing at hers before they had time to think. But this did not do at all before the prince, who quite failed to see the joke, and actually banished two of his courtiers who had dared to mention disrespectfully the dear little princess's tiny nose. The others, taking warning from this, learned to think twice before they spoke, and one even went so far as to tell the prince that, though it was quite true that no man could be worth anything unless he had a long nose, still, a woman's beauty was a different thing. And he knew a learned man who understood Greek, and had read in some old manuscripts that the beautiful Cleopatra herself had a tip-tilted nose. The prince made him a splendid present as a reward for this good news, and at once sent ambassadors to ask the dear little princess in marriage. The king, her father, gave his consent, and Prince Hyacinth, who in his anxiety to see the princess, had gone 3 leagues to meet her, was just advancing to kiss her hand when, to the horror of all who stood by, the enchanter appeared as suddenly as a flash of lightning, and snatching up the dear little princess, whirled her away out of their sight. The prince was left quite unconsolable, and declared that nothing should induce him to go back to his kingdom until he had found her again. In refusing to allow any of his courtiers to follow him, he mounted his horse and rode sadly away, letting the animal choose his own path. Credited to Le Prince Désir et La Princesse Mignon by Madame le Prince de Beaumont. East of the Sun and West of the Moon.
"What have you done now?" said he. "You have brought misery on both of us. If you had but held out for the space of 1 year, I should have been free. I have a stepmother who has bewitched me so that I am a white bear by day and a man by night. But now all is at an end between you and me, and I must leave you and go to her. She lives in a castle which lies east of the sun and west of the moon, and there too is a princess with a nose which is 3 ells, that is a cubit, long, and she is now the one whom I must marry."
She wept and lamented, but all in vain, for go he must. Then she asked him if she could not go with him, but no, that could not be.
"Can you tell me the way then, and I will seek you? That I may surely be allowed to do."
"Yes, you may do that," said he, "but there is no way thither. It lies east of the sun and west of the moon, and never would you find your way there." When she awoke in the morning, both the prince and the castle were gone, and she was lying on a small green patch in the midst of a dark, thick wood. By her side lay the selfsame bundle of rags which she had brought with her from her own home. So when she had rubbed the sleep out of her eyes, and wept till she was weary, she set out on her way, and thus she walked for many and many a long day, until at last she came to a great mountain. Outside it an aged woman was sitting, playing with a golden apple. The girl asked her if she knew the way to the prince who lived with his stepmother in the castle which lay east of the sun and west of the moon, and who was to marry a princess with a nose which was 3 ells long.
"How do you happen to know about him?" inquired the old woman. "Maybe you are she who ought to have had him."
"Yes, indeed I am," she said.
"So it is you, then," said the old woman. "I know nothing about him, but that he dwells in a castle which is east of the sun and west of the moon. You will be a long time in getting to it, if ever you get to it at all. But you shall have the loan of my horse, and then you can ride on it to an old woman who is a neighbor of mine. Perhaps she can tell you about him. When you have got there, you must just strike the horse beneath the left ear and bid it go home again. But you may take the golden apple with you."
So the girl seated herself on the horse and rode for a long, long way, and at last she came to the mountain where an aged woman was sitting outside with a gold carding comb. Credited to Asbjørnsen and Moe. The Master Maid. On the third day the bailiff came by, and he too saw the gold house in the little wood, and he too felt that he must go and see who lived there. And when he caught sight of the master maid, he became so much in love with her that he wooed her almost before he greeted her. The master maid answered him, as she had answered the other two, that if he had a great deal of money, she would have him. So far as that is concerned, I am not ill off, said the bailiff. So he was at once told to go home and fetch it, and this he did. At night he came back, and he had a still larger sack of money with him than the attorney had brought. It must have been at least 6 bushels, and he set it down on the bench. So it was settled that he was to have the master made. But hardly had they sat down together before she said that she had forgotten to bring in the calf and must go out to put it in the byre.
No, indeed, you shall not do that, said the bailiff. I am the one to do that.
And big and fat as he was, he went out as briskly as a boy.
Tell me when you have got hold of the calf's tail, said the master maid.
I have hold of it now, cried the bailiff.
Then you may hold the calf's tail, and the calf's tail hold you, and may you go round the world together till the day dawns, said the master maid.
So the bailiff had to bestir himself, for the calf went over rough and smooth, over hill and dale, and the more the bailiff cried and screamed, the faster the calf went. When daylight began to appear, the bailiff was half dead, and so glad was he to leave loose of the calf's tail that he forgot the sack of money and all else. He walked now slowly, more slowly than the sheriff and the attorney had done, but the slower he went, the more time had everyone to stare and look at him, and they used it too, and no one can imagine how tired out and ragged he looked after his dance with the calf.